Hello, ho, ho, and welcome to the show. It's the 12 Days of Tomfoolery. Say hi to the people, Kate.
Hi, I like that you made that. That was like the rap horse guy. That had like a nice little limerence to it. It was very nice.
I felt inspired by Mary Lude.
Yeah, exactly. Get your horse skulls ready. Well, we are excited for day five. We are moving into the fifth house. Some broad themes. Fifth house is ruled by Leo. It is the house of fun. It's the fun house. It covers fun. It covers children. And it covers like fun, flirty dating and like casual sex. It doesn't have to be casual, like no strings attached, but like just more fun, flirty sex. Not like the, you know, the deep stuff, the more like, let's have some fun kind of stuff. So it's a really fun house. And I'm excited to talk about some things with Christmas that have to go with it. Tiffany, are you going to start with something creepy or something fun?
Well, I was just rearranging my tabs on my computer, so we're going to go with creepy.
Yes, so I love it.
We're gonna continue down the line with the horrific things going on in Iceland. The Yule lads, yeah. who I mentioned in the previous episode, the 13 adult sons.
Iceland is a bonkers place, man. More horrific things.
Girl, I know it. I've been reading about it. So these are her, we just talked about Gryla. So these are her 13 adult sons. So here's the article. One of the things that makes Christmas in Iceland very different from most other Western countries is the absence of Santa Claus. In his place, we have, I got this from an Iceland magazine, so it was
is this straight, from the,
straight from the horse's mouth. So yeah. The Yule lads appear in old stories and folktales. Historically, the Yule lads and the other Christmas spirits were far meaner and more evil. But the beginning in the 18th century, and then especially during the 19th, they became more gentle. An 18th century royal decree about religious practice and domestic discipline, parents were banned from disciplining their children by scaring them with horror stories from monsters monsters like the Yule lads and Gryla and her crazy cat.
Apparently, they just escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Like, can't do it anymore, guys. Kids are losing their minds.
Look, it's gone too far. You got to quit. Yeah. It's out of hand. Can you imagine how out of hand it was that they had to make it a decree?
That is so intense. Like, I'm imagining all the kids in Iceland, like, terrified. Like, I can't sleep. A woman's going to come eat me and put me in a stew. Unhinged.
I love it. I'm sorry, kids. I do, anyway.
Too. I know. So, talk about Iceland's signed off the chat, too. All the kids are like, you're triggering us. They're calling their therapists right now.
I haven't heard about the Yule lads in years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Yule lads maintain their old habits of mischief and petty theft, but their appearance changed. So old stories describe monsters with little resemblance to humans, but by the 19th century, they had assumed a more human form. When wealthy merchants began hosting public Christmas tree balls at the end of the 19th century, the Yule lads had become friendly old men who brought treats.
Oh, so, wow.
quite the makeover.
I would love to see I would love to see an episode of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, like, hits up the Yule lads and is like, it's time to change this, guys. No more eating kids. We're going to turn you into old men that give people treats.
Yeah. No more of these, like, off-wool blends. That's got to go.
It's got to go. We need to get in touch with our hearts, guys. Our hearts.
Yeah. And then they get eaten. That would be the best episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the Kinder Yule lads first appeared in towns and villages while their evil characteristics survived longer in the countryside. However, their transformation had been completed by the 1930s when the Yule lads began making regular visits to schools and making appearances in the radio to tell children stories and sing Christmas songs. So the original number of the Yule lads varied. There are as many as 82 different lads and trolls. Wow. And in the 1860s, as this girl... And as in the 1860s, as the stories of the lads are being collected by their numbers, names, and characteristics are being standardized, they kind of chunked it down, shrunk it to 13 to respond to the 13 days of Christmas. And then it told me, do you want to read more about the Yule lads, including all of their little crazy names? And I was like, obviously I want to do that. So I just skip right over there. So it re-references that previous statement. Once there was as many as 82 Yule lads, but the stories and myths were being collected by an ethnographer, Jan Arneson. Did my best. So sorry. Their numbers, names, and characteristics. Thank you. Characteristics are standardized. I know. Thanks. And gradually the public settled on 13. When the poet Yannis Earl Coltilum wrote his Yule Lad poem, which I am going to read to you, which is why I skipped over here.
Thank God.
The poem still recited in schools in December, and many Icelanders know all of the verses by heart. And here's the English translation.
Yeah, they know it because they probably would get eaten if they don't.
It's strict out there. They're having a tough one. So I'm going to do my best with these names. Just keep in mind that this is Icelandic names and there's an obscene amount of consonants. So I'm doing my best. So, oh my gosh. Stekkjastar, the sheep coat clod. The first of them was the sheep coat clod. He came stiff as wood to prey upon farmer's sheep as far as he could. He wished to suck the ewes, but it was no accident. He couldn't. He had stiff knees. Not too convenient. Again, this is a translation, so don't expect it to rhyme. And then this one is called Gullygawk or Gil Jaguar. My God, this is terrible. Just ignore anything I say other than the weird poem. So the second was Gullygawk, gray his head and mine. He snuck into the cowbarn from his craggy ravine. Hiding in the stalls, he would steal the milk while the milkmaid gave the cowherd a meaningful smile. I'm just going to start fast reciting these since there's 13 of these guys. Then you have literally Stubby. Stubby was the third, called a stunted little man who watched for every chance to whisk off a pan. And scurrying away with it, he scraped off the bits that stuck to the bottom and his brims, his favorite. Then you have Puros Liker. Okay. Spoon Liker. That's much easier for me to say. The fourth was Spoon Liker. Like Spindle, he was thin. He felt himself in clover when he couldn't cook, it wasn't in. Then stepping up, he grappled the stirring spoon with glee, holding it with both hands, for it was slippery. And then our boy, Potaskafil, Pot Scraper. Pot Scraper, the fifth one, was funny sort of chap. When kids were giving scrappings, he'd come to the door and tap. And they would rush to see if there was really a guest. Then he hurried to the pot and had a scraping fest. Ask Aslilkir, the bowl licker. Bowl licker, the sixth one, was a shocking ill breed. From underneath the bedsteads, he stuck his ugly head. And when the bowls were left to be licked by dog or cat, he snatched them for himself. He was sure good at that. Then you have Huraskuller, the door slammer. The seventh was a door slammer, a sorry vulgar chap, when the people in twilight would take a little nap. He was happy as a lark with the havoc he could wreak, slamming doors and hearing the hinges on them squeak. And then Skirgobbler? I'm trying. It's Skyrga with a tick above it. Mur.
Skirgobbler? Let's go with Skirgobbler. Yeah. I like that.
Well, no. Yeah. That's what it says next to it is Skirgobbler. So okay, Skirgobbler. Oh my gosh, I can't even say this. Skirgobbler the eighth was an awful stupid bloke. He lambasted the skir tub till the lid on it broke. Then he stood there gobbling. His greed was well known. Until about to burst, he would bleat, howl, and groan. And then this one might be your boy here. Bunin and Cracker is the sausage swiper.
Yes. That's my boy. That's my you lad. That's my dude. Sausage swiper.
The ninth was sausage swiper, a shifty pilferer. He climbed up to the rafters and raided fruit from there. Sitting on the crossbeam in soot and in smoke, he fed himself on sausage fit for gentlefolk. Then we have this guy,
Gluga the softer Geiger. Side of sausage.
Softer just having folk. A little treat. Yeah. The window peeper, Gluga Geiger. Mm. The tenth was window peeper, a weird little twit. who stepped up to the window and stole a peek through it. And whatever was inside, to which his eye was drawn, he was most likely attempted to take later on.
I love that that's like the probably going to be on the sex offenders list. Like,
I know.
Yeah, stay away from that one.
Their origins were worse, so we'll just take a peep now. Yeah. So we've got Gata Pfeffer, the doorway sniffer. Okay. 11th was the door sniffer, adultish lad and gross. He never got a cold, yet had a huge sensitive nose. He caught the scent of lace bread while leagues away still and ran toward it weightless as wind over dale and hill. Ket Kroker, the meat hook. Meat hook, the 12th one, display his his talent would display as soon as he arrived on St. Thorlock's Day. He snagged himself a morsel of meat of any sort, although his hook at times was a bit tiny and short. Whoa, throwing shade.
Uh-oh. Yeah, side eye.
And then that finally, sucks. We have Curtis Snicker, the candle beggar. 13th was a candle beggar. 'Twas cold, I believe. If he was not the last of the lot on Christmas Eve, he trailed after the little ones who, like happy sprites, ran about the farm with their fine tallow lights.
Aww.
So
that's the whole gang. These are
the children. That's the whole gang. The mother, Gryla, which I just covered in the other episode. It was the children of her and her husband, and I'll do my best, Lepaludi, who's just known as Lepaludi, the lazy husband. So
is that the one that she ate or no? Different one.
It doesn't say on this article, but I was wondering the same thing. Yeah. Or is this the replacement husband? I don't know, because she did replace the husband she ate. Yeah. And then they also have in their home the Christmas cat. And I heard someone pronounce this and I replayed it about 10 times and I still can't do it. So Holikaturin, which I will talk about in the next episode, is the Yule cat. But each of the Yule lads comes out on a different day. So we read the poem, and the sheepcote clod is December 12th, Stekenjaster. So he's the first one who comes on the night before December 12th, and he's said to suck milk from sheep and was known for having two wooden feet peg-legged to guard your sheepies where they lay.
Wow, this is some intense Iceland, man.
They doing it.
Intense place. That's an intense place.
Then December 13th, Gullygock is the second Yule lad. He comes the night before December 13th. He was known to hide in barns and steal the milk froth off the milk buckets. Goodbye, good froth. That's what it literally says.
Bye.
Bye. Later. And then our boy Stubby Stufer, the third one of the Yule lads, comes on the night before the 14th. He was known for being unusually short and stealing pans to eat the crusts left on them. Well, who can blame him? I've known a scrumptious crust or two.
I love me like, too.
The back and forth.
Yeah.
So they each come each night and they kind of replicate what's in the poem. So it's there's one each night all the way up until the 24th, and that's when you get your candle stealer, and he comes in and steals your candles. So I don't know where the presents come in, but I guess they're just taking snacks and stealing your stuff. So
maybe the present is that you're not getting put into a stew. Maybe that's the present.
Maybe like, that is the present.
You got it lucky, kids. Yeah. You better count your lucky stars, bebes.
I mean, to live another day in Iceland, I guess they just made it.
Hashtag survivors.
Hashtag survivor song. So that's a little bit about the Yule lads. I thought that was a fun one.
So fun. So it's actually really funny that you did that because mine is kind of like the Americanized version. Like it's very similar.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to go into two topics, but the first one is about the elves, Santa's elves, and their kind of how they came to be. So as it seems, a lot of things in Christmas are roots in traditional Norse mythology that refer to the Alfar, meaning the hidden folk. They were immortal with youthful appearance. And in Norse mythology, they kept Santa's, or I guess more traditional Norse mythology, they kept Santa's workshop hidden from human eyes. In Germanic paganism, They were creatures of the light that lived in the heavens. So like elves are like good. They're, you know, they're love and light kind of a thing. In Scandinavian culture, they were house gnomes with magical powers to protect homes from evil spirits. But they were a little more, what's the word I'm thinking of? A little more tricky, I guess. Mischievous. Perfect. In this mythology, they would use their magical powers to pull pranks on bad people. I know, right? I'm into it. Giving them hiccups and bad dreams, which I'm like, okay.
Oh, wow.
There's been nights where I've been drunk and I've had hiccups and bad dreams. Right. Is that like some Scandinavian elves? Like, we're about to teach you something. But also, if you placed a bowl of porridge in front of your door at night, you could avoid being the victim of their pranks. So I guess they could be appeased by an offering of porridge. Me too. Same.
I mean, that's a pretty humble request. I don't think that's too bad. Some porridge.
Yeah, me neither. It would assuage me as well. Their image became popularized in American culture from a magazine, which I love the name of this magazine, Godey's Lady Book. Like, I don't know what this magazine was, but apparently it was the rage.
It's clearly for us.
Clearly for us. I need the next copy of Godey's LB. It had an 1873 Christmas issue that had pictures of all the elves and kind of in their current incarnation, kind of the, you know, very cute, the big ears, little tiny hats, all that kind of stuff. So I guess that's after that, they kind of took off, which also shout out to the movie Elf, that I'm not like a huge Christmas movie person, but I do fucking love Elf. Sorry,
it's
about
super
dad,
funny.
Buddy. It's just
oh,
so
yeah.
cute. Yeah, I love it. Hey, buddy, I hope you find your dad. I actually haven't
narwhal.
Seen it. Yeah, the narwhal. I know. I love that guy.
I love that I just called it straight away.
I know. Your elf memory, A+. I might watch it tonight. I haven't watched it in a couple of years, and it does bring me joy. But then I found a little list of apparently there are 6 or 7 like head boss elves, which I never knew. But here is a list of them.
I didn't know
like
that either.
Cats. The first is Alabaster Snowball. And Alabaster Snowball. Yeah. It's great. Helps out Santa with the naughty or nice list. He regularly updates it so that Santa knows exactly how children are behaving around the world. And I do like to picture him with like this big crystal ball, just like able to hone in on any kid at any time. He's Alabaster's got his eye on you. For sure.
That is such a baller name.
Right? Oh, they're all so good. They're all so
good.
Oh,
nice.
Alabaster Snowball. The next one is Bushy Evergreen, which also kind of sounds like a porn name, but it's an elf's name. Bushy Evergreen is the, speaking of porn, is the inventor of the magic toy making machine. He is the head toy maker and makes sure that the children's demands for toys are met. So he's got a serious job, right? Like he's making all the toys. Yeah, he's the worker. The next one is Pepper is the first name. Last name is Minsticks. So Peppermint Sticks.
That is super cute.
I know, it's adorable. Peppermint Sticks guards the secret location of Santa's workshop and village. He has a tough job making sure that no children or adults find out exactly where Santa and all his Christmas elves are hard at work. So he's like the bouncer, you know?
Girl, that was a jump scare. You startled me.
What can I say? This is high stakes stuff talking about these elves.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah. The next one is Shinny Up a Tree. Shinny Up a Tree is Santa's oldest friend and co-founder of Santa's village. He's the leader of the elves and completely dedicated to Santa and his mission. So I figure he's like the, like in Game of Thrones, the like hand of the king. That's Shinny Up a Tree. Yep. Doesn't get enough respect, but he's behind the scenes making sure things happen. The next one is Sugar Plum Mary. Sugar Plum Mary is the head of Sweet Treats and the assistant to Mrs. Claus herself. She loves cooking sweet treats to share. Oh, cute. And then the last one is Wunner's Open Sleigh. Wunner's.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I know. It's amazing. Wunner's Open Sleigh designed Santa's sleigh and is responsible for keeping it in top condition. And he is also in charge of the reindeer too. So that's like the North Pole's mechanic, I guess. Their engineer making the sleigh work. So I thought that was really, really pretty adorable. Very, very cute. Yeah. And then the second thing I wanted to get into, just because I was like, first of all, I made the mistake of, because I was like, oh, I wonder if I can find out anything about like something like sexy Christmas, you know, for like the flirty fun sex part of the fifth house. So I made the dire error of putting into my search like Christmas sex, and I got like, oh, no. You know, all the, yeah, I was like, oh, I don't want to see any of that. It was quite the, quite the pages to search through.
Just gonna go ahead and like scrub my browser real quick.
Yeah, like if anyone saw that, because like what came up, you know, it was like porn stuff, but it was like,
yeah,
Santa, you know. Aww. it was I wouldn't want anyone to think that like that's my go-to, like. Let me tell you what really gets me going.
But what if some guy was just so down and he just saw it, like you opened your laptop, you're like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, and you closed it, and then like he dressed like Santa for you? What if he went all the way?
Oh my god. Okay, so wait, that's actually really funny, because my ex-boyfriend was not into
like, yeah,
role playing Santa sex, but he did before he moved out to New York, when he still lived in Michigan, he surprised me. He was Jewish, actually, but he wanted me to have like a really nice Christmas. So he surprised me, and he got me the day off work. Like I was going in to work Christmas. And my boss was like, oh, you actually got your shift covered. And he had flown in and was in a Santa like costume for me. It was very, very cute. But what if I had been like, yeah, baby, forget your plans. Let's go back right now. Didn't know you were going to be in a red velvet suit, babe. Woo. Let's give that North Pole a visit. Yeah, no.
You could have like taken it way too far and be like, tell me I'm a good little Gentile, because he was Jewish. Yeah!
Oh my god.
So we're just systematically a bad shiksa. Yes. We're just systematically ostracizing all of our
every culture
audience base. Sorry.
Every single culture. No.
Anyway,
really,
so back to like, how you ruined your browser. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I ruined my browser. But anyway, I did find something that is interesting. And it is an article written by this like sex expert or sex therapist about how to deal with if you have a naughty Christmas party hookup with a colleague, which I just thought was really funny. And in this article, the picture that she chose to put of herself, she's sitting inside of a giant vagina sculpture at the Erotic Museum, which is so funny. And she's like, hey, just chill. Like, she looks so happy sitting in this vagina. It's really, really funny. But so I won't go through the whole thing, but here's her ultimate guide to navigating an office party hookup. Just in case, guys, it's the season. So protect yourself. Be aware of power dynamics. If the other party answers to you, then you should make an extra effort to ensure they feel safe and respected. You should always feel safe and respected in a hookup, though. Come on. Two, create a consensual agreement. Again, that should always be a part of things, but it is essential to talk to the other person about how to move forward, including whether you will speak about the night again, if it will happen again, and whether you will tell other people. Three, check the contract. Many workplaces prohibit workplace relationships. Four, have fun. It's possible to have a sexual and professional relationship. So I like that she's just like, yeah, go for it. Keep fucking your coworker. Come on. And then five, aftercare is the essential moment in between. Aftercare is for everyone and every time you have sex, long-term or a one-night stand. It's as important as foreplay. The 30 seconds or however long you've got of reconnecting and checking in after the act makes for better sex. Then she goes into a whole thing. But another thing that I found absolutely fascinating, and this is the statistic on it, 54% of holiday party hookups, like inter-office mingling, turn into long-term relationships. And I can say for a fact, my old coworkers that I worked with 5 or 6 years ago hooked up. It was the chef and a hostess hooked up at a holiday party. They are still together. They have moved to San Francisco together, and they seem like a very, very happy couple. So maybe it's true. If you're looking for true love,
Look, if you've been in the industry, that's a tale as old as time. Back of the house going for the hostess? Come on now.
Oh my God, I know. But the tale of old of, as old of time, tale as old as time is not them then cultivating a healthy relationship, at least in my
experience. No, that's true.
In my experience.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's not, not usually the way that goes.
Not what I have observed personally, no. Yeah.
No, me either. This was an outlier, and maybe it was the Christmas magic, but they are. They're actually a really, really adorable couple. They're so cute. But yeah, so that's my little take on don't look up Christmas sex unless you want a whole lot of Christmas porn, and make sure that you're having a consensual hookup if you're at an office party. Boom. Fifth house, baby.
Yeah, check the fine print and make sure everything's consensual. Yeah.
I love it. Check the contract. Check your work contract.
She's not wrong, though. She's not wrong, though.
No, she's not. She's definitely not. But like, can I fuck my boss? Oh, I can. Great. Let's go fuck. Yeah, it just made me laugh. And I'll post that picture of her. I got to post the KFC thing too, but the picture of her in the giant vagina because it's really funny.
That in and of itself is like big power moves. Picture in a giant vagina. Divine feminine energy just shooting at my eyeballs.
I know. The Yoni portal. I want to go get one and make it my link. The Yoni portal. Yeah, that's what they call it. Like, I was listening to this one podcast, a spiritual podcast. And they were talking about the birth canal and they were like, and then the spirit goes from the Yoni portal. And I was like, oh God, I've gotten too deep in this spiritual shit. Like, Yoni portal, come on. Come on.
I'm into it.
No, of course. I listened to the rest of it and was like, yeah, absolutely. I'm just joking. I was totally into it.
Really quickly, another seamless segue on my part. You want to hear quickly about the advent calendar?
I absolutely do. Yeah, it's an advent calendar of different Yoni portals. Woohoo!
No, we're not doing that. But we're just going to go over this cute little article about a brief history of advent calendars, just for funsies. You don't need an advent calendar to know that Christmas is coming, but opening a little numbered door to reveal a prize is an idea that everyone, religious or not, can totally get behind. Here is a quick coverage of the history of advent calendars and a few non-traditional designs of the popular tradition. The advent is the four-week period beginning on the Sunday nearest the feast of St. Andrew the Apostle, like November 30th, through the following three Sundays. Historians estimate that advent, which derives from the Latin word coming, has been celebrated since the 4th century. Originally, the period was known as a time for converts to Christianity to prepare for baptism, but now it's more commonly associated with the anticipation of the anniversary of Christ's birth on December 25th. Advent calendars typically don't follow the period of the Advent described above, but instead they begin on December 1st and go through the 24 days before Christmas. And then you have the big door is always Christmas. Most Advent calendars include paper doors that reveal an image, a Bible verse, or a piece of chocolate, and that tradition dates back to about the mid-19th century when German Protestants made chalk marks on doors or lit candles to count the days leading up to Christmas. Gerhard Lange is widely considered the producer of the first printed Advent calendar in the early 1900s. Around the same time, a German newspaper included an Advent calendar insert as a gift to its readers. Lange's calendar was inspired by one that his mother had made for him and featured 24 colored pictures that attached to a piece of cardboard. Lange modified his calendar to include little doors that are a staple of most Advent calendars today, and they become more commercially successful in Germany. Production did stop due to a cardboard shortage during World War II, but resumed soon after, with Richard Selmer emerging as the leading producer of the commercial Advent calendars. Dwight D. Eisenhower is often credited for the proliferation of the Advent calendar tradition in the United States. During his presidency, Eisenhower was photographed opening an Advent calendar with his grandchildren, and the photo ran in several national newspapers. You could go to and then they go talk about what you can put in your Advent calendar, and that's about the end of it. You go traditional and make each day a treat, like a piece of chocolate, a quote, or an image. Or you could put a modern twist on your advent and follow a specific pop culture related theme. Some institutions take the versions to the next level, and then there's been a lot of jaw-dropping advent calendars over the years. One of the most expensive advent calendars to ever hit the shelves was a 4-foot Christmas tree shaped structure carved from burr and elm, Burr Elm and Walnut Wood, available through Harrods in 2007. Each of the calendar's 24 compartments, each of the $50,000 calendar's 24 compartments, housed a piece of organic chocolate from Green and Black, with proceeds going to support cocoa farmers in Belize. And according to the Guinness World Records, the world's largest advent calendar was built in 2007 at St. Pancras train station in London. The massive calendar, which measured 232 feet and 11 inches tall and 75 feet and 5 inches wide, celebrated the reopening of the station following a renovation. So that is cool. That.
You know what this got me thinking? I'm going to Google and see if there's, because I feel like there's advent calendars for like everything nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe I didn't think of this before. I'm going to see if there's a crystal one. And if there is, I'm going to get it. I don't care if it's too late. I guarantee there probably is. I need it.
I'm into it.
It's my Christmas present to myself. Yeah. A new crystal every day. Yes.
I'm going to be honest. I thought you were about to make a joke and be like, I'm going to see if there's a Yoni advent calendar. So then you said crystal and I was like, nice pivot. I love that.
One Yoni portal is enough. I've got one and thanks. It's plenty. That's plenty.
Well,
I'm good.
Hopefully we've upset enough people this episode. Please don't complain on the Facebook page. We're just permanently sorry. So sorry. Let's say bye to the people, Kate.
Bye. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys. We love you.